good day to be indigenous. Get up,
stand up. They are going to become more brutal.
Courtney Cup, he need cut again.
Because all the hippies were trying to be Indians anyway.
They're going to become more repressive because it's a matter of dollars and their illusionary concepts of power.
Hey, Victor.
We must live in balance with the earth.
And also with recent happenings at Wounded Knee.
I am awake.
Hey, Cudahy to all my friends and relatives in four directions. You're listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Wakunjahade, which means distant thunder in the Ho-Chunk language. My colonized name and taxpayer name is Robert Pilot, and we discuss local and national Native news and events. And as you all know, Native issues are human issues, and human issues are Native issues.
This is brought to you by Howling for Wolves, howlingforwolves.org. Just as a reminder, October 24th from 2 to 4 p.m., Howling for Wolves is hosting an outdoor fundraiser event in the downtown park area. That is 49th Avenue South in Hopkins, Minnesota, with an artist, a Native American artist, that will be Jen Hewitt will actually be performing there as well. So go out there and support our sponsor, Howling for Wolves, doing good work out there.
As always, thanks, Lewis. And Lewis is awesome. I just thought I'd say that. What the heck? Hey, we discuss things here that you don't hear on other radio stations or radio shows across the nation. And we discuss Native news and what affects Native Americans, which is a lot of things. But specifically, we talk about a lot of things here. But we start out with the news, and again, you don't hear this news or this kind of news anywhere else. So I want to pull in Ogama and with the news. Thanks, Ogama.
Hi, Buju, Aneen, everybody. I'm Ogama Ganuikwe. I am from the Red Lake Nation in northern Minnesota. Just want to give everybody from Red Lake Nation a shout out today. You know why. So it's an exciting day for us. We're pretty excited about what's happening in Red Lake Nation. As always, I like to start out with a little bit of news on what's happening in our local area and our national area, actually, a little bit here. So what's been happening this week at Washington, D.C. is that there has been a people versus fossil fuels rally that's been present in several areas around Washington, D.C. The first event happened on Monday on Indigenous Peoples Day with an Indigenous-led event that parked in front of the White House lawn on the other side of the fence, and I believe there was 160-plus arrests that day. The second day followed through, third day as well, with different themes that happened, but today was probably one of the most important days. Yesterday, I suppose, was important too, but today's theme was the youth. So the youth were out today marching in front of the White House and making their voices heard, indicating that they had no choice in climate change issues that are now affecting them directly and will affect them directly for the rest of their known lives. Basically, that they did not get a vote and they are being affected by this. So shout out to our youth who were doing that. Yesterday, other Indigenous activists trying to draw awareness to the Line 3 and Line 5 and Mountain Valley pipelines did end up occupying the Bureau of Indian Affairs offices. As of yesterday, all who were arrested by the Department of the Interior were released safe and resting. There was no heightened charges for anyone. There was only unlawful entry, misdemeanor, and a remote court date. There's no cash bail in Washington, D.C., so there's not a collective link for that. But instead, there will be individual and direct Venmo, Cash App, and PayPal for the relatives who need self-care or additional financial support after their arrest in Washington, D.C. yesterday. So make sure you're keeping an eye out for them. I do know that one of those people who may have suffered arrest was with Indigenous Environmental Network, so they've been a really great place to follow for those kinds of things. And again, you know, check in on your water protector friends who have been putting up a lot to deal with this and to go and be accountable in front of our elected officials for all of us on behalf of the water. I do want to let everybody know that coming up next week, Stop the Money Pipeline is hosting an online webinar at 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern time to learn more about how asset managers are driving the climate crisis and violating indigenous rights. You can register at bit.ly/BlackRock101. Again, that's next week, Wednesday, October 20th, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific time. And that's going to be a really great event because BlackRock and Vanguard are actually two of the biggest funders of the fossil fuel industry. As asset managers, which is what they are, these companies are basically trusted to make good long-term decisions with clients' money, but they're continuing on a path with climate destruction, and that's not a good long-term decision, and it creates dangerous levels of risk financially and environmentally. These investors have massive power to hold companies that violate indigenous rights, drive deforestation, and profit from fossil fuels. They have the way that these investors have a way to hold these people accountable. So we definitely want to support that, find out ways that we can support that. So that is an awesome event. And again, that's bit.ly/BlackRock101, or you can check out stopthemoneypipeline.org for more information on that. Here in Minnesota, the flags of the 11 federally recognized tribes within Minnesota have now been provided to each school site by the American Indian Education Department to be used for teachings and displayed for representation with the First Peoples of this land. The flags will also be represented at every year's graduation and large district gatherings. So that's really exciting to finally have all 11 nations flags, federally recognized nations flags recognized in Minnesota. The last thing that I want to talk about is if you have not yet heard of this problem, I want to make you aware of what's being called currently in a lot of spheres the Nunavut water crisis. The capital of the Nunavut nation, Iqaluit, is facing a huge water crisis. There was a state of emergency declared yesterday for at least 14 days. What's basically happening is that there was fuel in petrocarbon or petroleum fuel in the city's water supply. Petroleum hydrocarbons is what it is. So about 8,000 residents are being advised to not consume tap water for drinking or cooking until further notice. Even boiling or filtering the water is not safe. It's too early to know what's going on. They just sent the water out for testing and they're expecting it to be back within about 5 days. The mayor of Iqaluit, Mayor Kenny Bell, told a news television station in Canada that the investigators discovered the smell of the petroleum products in one of the containment units that the city uses to store its drinking water. But residents had actually been reporting the smell of petroleum and had started boiling their own water about a week ahead of time. Right now, the mayor is suggesting that it's possible that the water filtration system was likely damaged due to climate change. Residents are having a really hard time right now. Some residents are reporting side effects, including dizziness, headaches, nausea, and vomiting, especially in small children. But residents are also currently paying $9 a liter for a bottle of water or more, and they're lining up for hours to buy it. I've heard some reports from those who are in the area that there is some places where they're paying $60 for a case of bottled water. They're in this case for at least 14 days, and the water's not going to be potable until then. So this is until October 27th, and we're at the 15th today. There was a major shipment of water, approximately 30,000 liters of the promised 80,000 had arrived as of, I believe, today or yesterday. But it's a dire crisis up there in the Nunavut Nation, and we want to make sure that we send our prayers out to our relatives in Canada and the Nunavut Nation who are, again, directly experiencing problems due to climate change.
Wow. Thank you, Pini Gigi, for the news. I just want to give a quick shout out if you're in the Twin Cities. They're having a mini powwow, too, at the Indian Center tonight on Franklin Avenue. I'll be leaving this show immediately and going and getting my mocks on and do a couple round dances and whatever else needs to happen. So I'll be out there. Pini Gigi Ogama for the news. You're listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and up next, State Senator Mary Kunish. We'll be right back after this short break. Stay with us.
Hey, Ogama, I've been hearing a lot about this term, climate justice. What is that?
Climate justice is recognizing that the negative impacts of climate change don't affect all people equally. It also means transitioning from a fossil fuel-based economy to a more sustainable future. MN350 is one of the groups that's pushing for this transition to protect our futures. You can even get involved, too.
That's great, especially since I'm concerned about pipeline projects like Line 3. How can I help MN350?
Just find them on Facebook or visit mn350.org.
Unwanted sexting or photos, inappropriate jokes, even tickling or wrestling can feel like a violation. Catcalling, cornering, or groping, getting them drunk or high for sex. Recording sexual acts without permission. Hurting someone because of their sexual orientation. Raping a family member, a child, a date, a friend, a stranger. Purchasing a human being for sex. You make the choice every single time. Sexual violence is many things. Make a choice. Do not do it.
Sponsored by the Minnesota Indian Women's Sexual Assault Coalition.
The new Line 3 tar sands crude oil pipeline threatens our water and climate.
It's the end of the tar sands party, and Enbridge wants to sell some oil. Tar sands is the dirtiest oil in the world, so they really put our Great Lakes water in peril. The environmental permitting for this process is a joke. The line was shoved down our throats, and that's wrong. And we're still fighting it, and it's brutal. They should do an environmental impact statement on this project.
Visit stopline3.org to take action.
What we want is a just transition.
If you're hurting in your relationship or have been affected by sexual violence, you're not alone. Strong Hearts Native Helpline can help you through these difficult and uncertain times. Strong Hearts Helpline is a free 24/7 confidential domestic dating and sexual violence helpline for Native Americans. Help is available by calling 1-844-762-8483 or by clicking on the chat now icon on strongheartshelpline.org. This message is sponsored by the National Indigenous Women's Resource Center.
Hi, this is Representative Charisse Davids from Kansas. I'm Ho-Chunk, and you're listening to Native Roots Radio.
We are Haluza Nation.
Hey, welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Wakunja Hade.
This portion of the show is brought to you by MN350, a grassroots organization fighting for climate justice. Get involved at mn350.org.
Welcome back. And Friday means we have State Senator Mary Kunish on, and we're always pleased to have her on. And I just want to, before we get on here, I just want to wish her, well, I guess I'm going to celebrate all week, but I just want to wish you a happy Colonizer Savior Day. We saved those colonizers. So, and welcome to Native Roots Radio Presents. I'm Awake, Mary.
Mataki happy, everybody. Good to see you all.
Hey, seeing that you were very busy on Monday, I saw you running around there. Really good work and good things happening. You know, with Maggie Lorenz's group down there, that was just awesome to see what was happening there. We kind of missed that. Ogama and I were in D.C. protesting. I mean, covering the protest.
Yeah, it was a great, great celebration. What Robert's talking about was the groundbreaking for Wakan Tipi in down on the river near the sacred caves. And, you know, we've supported the Wakan Tipi, and there will be a nature center down there, too, that will really address a lot of educational issues for Native folks, like with language and ecology and some of the cultures of our Native folks. But what was so great is that we weren't sure how many people would show up, and there were just tons and tons of people. We had quite a traffic jam down there. And what was really, really beautiful is the Latinx community that came and danced and celebrated, as well as the Hmong folks there too, there was a woman who gave just a beautiful, beautiful song in her native language. And so it really was a celebration of community. And of course, Maggie Lorenz and her husband Barry were there to talk about it. The lieutenant governor was there. The mayor was there. President Shelley Beck from her tribe. And so, yeah, it was just a really great gathering in the evening. I started the morning with a sunrise service at Bede Mikaska, and then just bing, 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 and ended up with that sunset ceremony down at Wakantipi.
Wow, yeah, I missed both those. And I know even last year during COVID, I made it down and everyone was wearing masks and it was raining for the sunrise ceremony. But it's funny, we all had masks on last year and it was raining and it was dark and I didn't know who anybody was. It was like
no,
oh.
It was the perfect morning. It was cool and chilly. And, you know, you get down there at 6:30 and it is dark as night. Like you said, you don't know who. I was supposed to meet like three people there. I could not find them. And then all of a sudden the sun started to rise. And little by little by little, you look next to yourself and you're like, oh, that's you right there. And of course, the Lemoyne was there and he gave a beautiful opening as well as his son. So it was just a great way to start the day.
Yeah, that does sound great. Yeah, I really missed out, but we were out doing our thing. But next year we'll be really covering what's happening around Turtle Island. So what else has been going on with you? It's been a week or so since we've seen you. I know you're on break, but really you're not on break because you're constantly working, right? And so
break,
tell us
no break, bit, yeah.
Tell us
well,
a little
Tuesday
bit.
I got up super early and drove up to Ely, Minnesota. I had been invited by the American Association of University Women to share information about the MMIW Task Force and then the MMIR office. And the room was packed. I had no idea. That was, I would say, the average age was probably about 60 or more. And they just absorbed that information and asked question after question after question. A lot of it is like, why do we not know this? How do we not know that? And, of course, I brought into it about the boarding school and the relocation era and the child removal and all of those things. And they were legitimately horrified. But it's like I always tell people, if you don't know, we'll give you a pass. But now that you know, it's your responsibility to make some good changes. And then the word got out and they invited me over to the community college, Vermilion Community College, where I was did another presentation. And they greeted me with this basket full of gifts, homegrown native tobacco, as well as the seeds. So next year I might have my own tobacco patch. And then there was a drummer and dancers, and I presented my information again, and they asked such good questions. Again, so many of them had no idea of the tragedy and the violence to Native communities, as well as, you know, the removal of our children in so many different ways. So it was, for me, an incredible educating day. And then I drove all the way back home and did another one that evening for another group. So the word is out. We're getting the word out and educating the public. But another really interesting thing that I got to do yesterday, was to do a presentation on the Native vote and the issues within Indian country on voting. And, you know, we kind of all know this stuff, but when you have to put it down and then actually, you know, make sure that you're being actual factual and not just like, well, here's what I know and here's what everybody says, but, you know, go back and look at the data and the information. It was just a great opportunity for me to learn some more things, but again, an opportunity for me to share the struggle of of what our Native folks have gone through for years and years. And as I was studying that, you know, I realized that it wasn't until the early 20s that Native Americans were finally recognized as citizens of this land, this right. land that their ancestors have lived on forever and ever. And I think of my grandpa. So my grandpa wasn't even a citizen of this country that his ancestors lived on forever until his mid-20s. And then he wasn't even eligible to vote in federal elections until his 30s, while all along his Irish-English wife was voting and was able to do that. So those are the horror stories that you know, it was a revelation to me, even though in the back of my head I knew that. But to put it on paper and then share it with people again, nobody had any idea of these struggles. And so the struggle is real. We're making really good change. And I look forward to this next election and see how we even get more of our Native folks out to vote.
Yeah, it's interesting, too. It's daunting when you put it all together. I'm here with State Senator of Minnesota, Mary Kunish, but it's totally daunting. And I know we talk about the 60s scoop, and I'm part of that, even though that was a Canadian phenomena, but it was definitely here, too, in the United States. And for some of our new listeners out in Chicago and Madison, I know you turned me on to that Finding Cleo podcast, and it's a 10-part podcast that really blew my mind. And do you want to just talk about that for a couple minutes here before we jump into the next segment?
Right. Yeah, I'm happy to. I stumbled across that podcast. It's called Finding Cleo, and it comes out of the Canadian Broadcasting System. And it's a series of an investigation or a discovery. A bunch of adults are looking for their sister Cleo that had been missing since they were all literally scooped up out of their home, taken from their home. And these are Native kids up in Canada. And they're all dispersed to farms, to families. Some of them were in some pretty bad situations. Some were okay. But the eldest daughter, Cleo, never came home. Somehow all those kids found their way home. And Cleo did not. And the oldest brother, they made a pact that they would find each other. And he was just guilt-ridden because he couldn't or hadn't found Cleo. And so it takes us through the whole process of what is called the 60s scoop. And that was, especially in Canada, but it happened here. It still happens in Minnesota. Minnesota has the highest number of Native children removed from their homes than any other state in the United States. It continues today in Minnesota. And so these kids, the family was totally destroyed. The mother herself had been through incredible trauma. I won't tell you everything, but if you can, just Google Finding Cleo, and it's a podcast coming out of Canada, and yeah. It's riveting. And it's so right on what happened.
Yeah, we'll talk a little bit more about that, but we're going to take a quick break. We're here with Minnesota State Senator Mary Kunish, and you're listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and we'll be right back after this short break. Stay with us.
Minnesota has the only original wolf population in the continental United States, and 80% of Minnesotans believe the wolf should be protected. Howling for Wolves is asking Minnesotans to respect our true wildlife manager, the wolf. Their survival is critical to our ecosystems, our communities, and even our economy. As highly intelligent animals with strong social bonds, Minnesota wolves deserve to be protected and admired. Learn more at howlingforwolves.org. Let's live and let howl.
Nightingale is your cozy, comfortable neighborhood restaurant in the Whittier neighborhood at 26th and Lindale. Nightingale has patio, dining room, and bar seating available. Plus, they still have takeout and delivery. Their menu has lots of delicious options like the famous Nightingale Burger and Fries, Ginger Tamari Chicken Wings, Smoked Chicken Liver Pate, and more. They're open from 5 p.m. to 1 a.m. daily with their full menu until midnight. So make the friendly neighborhood Nightingale your go-to restaurant in South Minneapolis. Place an order, make a reservation, and more at nightingalempls.com.
Hi, I'm Adam Ostrowski of Woodland Stoves and Fireplaces, and I would like to tell you about a big new tax credit. Starting this year, earn a 26% federal tax credit based on the purchase and installation costs of an efficient wood stove or fireplace insert.
We got our wood stove from Woodland Stoves and Fireplaces to lower our carbon footprint and to harvest our own renewable energy. Now you can get 26% off the cost in the form of a federal tax credit.
At Woodland Stoves and Fireplaces, it is our job to find a place for fire that works in your life. We have a diverse selection of fireplace products. Clean wood burning, convenient gas burning, and easy to install electric stoves and fireplaces for inside your home or outdoors too.
Fire offers comfort from the cold and warms the heart. At Woodland Stoves and Fireplaces, there are so many ways to discover your place for fire, with over 35 working indoor and outdoor fireplaces. Woodland Stoves and Fireplaces on the corner of East Franklin Avenue and Riverside in Minneapolis. Out of the ordinary products and services since 1977.
This is Santita Jackson, Minneapolis, St. Paul. I couldn't be more excited about starting our days together, Monday through Friday, 6 to 8 a.m. Central, on the Progressive Voice of Minnesota.
This is Greg, host of Ghost Box Radio. Create a pathway for connection and enlightenment in your life with Collective Dimensions. They're an inclusive metaphysical shop that specializes in high vibration and healing resources. Collective Dimensions has some of the most gifted practitioners in the areas of Reiki, mediumship, tarot, and more to guide you through your personal journey of spiritual growth. They'll assist you in your journey of self-care. So, awaken your individual and collective awareness with Collective Dimensions. More at CollectiveDimensions.com.
Hey, Wendy, what are we doing for dinner after the show?
How about we go to J. Selby's on 169 Victoria Street in St. Paul? They have a delicious plant-based menu that's compassionate and environmentally sustainable.
I'm getting their spot-on vegan Big Mac, the dirty secret.
You can pick up and they deliver within a five-mile radius, or you can call them at 651-222-3263 or visit jselbys.com.
Well, you sold me one. Let's go order at J. Selby's tonight.
I'm hungry.
Is your remote workforce putting your company at risk? Cyber criminals are targeting your employees with COVID-19-inspired emails and attacking businesses like yours. Hi, Mark Sommerfeld from Rimark. Rimark has the tools and expertise to enable your employees to work securely from home. If you need help getting your staff to work remotely and securely, call 651-328-8900 or go to RimarkIT.com. That's 651-328-8900 or RimarkIT.com.
With your AM 950 weather, I'm Brett Johnson. Look for partly cloudy skies overnight with a low around 38, Saturday sunny with a high near 61, and Sunday sunny with a high around 65.
For over 45 years, Woodland Stoves and Fireplaces has been helping you find a place for fire that works in your life. They have over 35 working indoor and outdoor fireplaces on display at their showroom on the corner of East Franklin Avenue and Riverside Avenue in Minneapolis. Learn more at woodlandstoves.com.
Hey, welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Robert Pilot.
This portion of the show is brought to you by the Minnesota Indian Women's Sexual Assault Coalition.
Wow, thanks a lot. I'm here with State Senator of Minnesota, Mary Kunish, and we were talking a little bit about Finding Cleo and the 60s Scoop. And I would like to, before we move any further, I would like to ask you a little bit more about what you mentioned about removal of Minnesota being the biggest state on removing Native American children from their families. Could you elaborate a little more on that? Whoops. You are on mute.
There we are. Yeah. Awesome. it's a sad reality that here in Minnesota, we continue to remove our Native kids from their families at higher rates than any other state in the United States. And, you know, from what we've heard, from what we can see from the data is that they're removed from their families at higher rates and oftentimes separated out and sent to put in foster care. And so what happens is that, you know, this is another way that our families are destroyed. I think across the nation, I read that Native Americans are up to 4 times more likely to have their children taken and placed into foster care than any other non-Native group of people. And it's really a dirty secret around Minnesota. Our Native kids represent more than 35% of those in foster care across the nation. And, you know, yet our Native Americans make up only 9%. No, in Minnesota, it's 2%. So It's the disproportionality is just unbelievable. And the thing is that in 1978, there's this Indian Child Welfare Act, it's ICWA,
right.
Was created, and it's there to provide extra protections. It's there to discontinue the impact, the unequal impact rate of Native American kids that are in foster care. And so for whatever reason, oftentimes our county social workers, the legal system is not familiar with ICWA and what was supposed to be happening. And it's just a really sad thing to recognize. So I work or I sit on the board of the ICWA Indian Child Welfare Law Center here in Minneapolis. And we hear these stories and we do the best that we can to help these families intercept any issues with separation from parent and child. But we also really work to reunify them. And so this continues to be the case. Oftentimes kids are removed for reasons that, you know, other non-Native kids would not be removed. We had a story about one grandma who was watching the kids because the parents work, and the kids ran out of the house, got on the bus. Well, it was cold outside, and when the kids got to school and they didn't have their jackets, child protection was called, and the children were removed from the family. I mean, I worked in middle schools. Robert, you worked in high schools. Yep. There's tons of kids that, you know, come to school in shorts and clip-clops in the middle of winter in a storm. They're not removed from their families.
No.
So this is continuing to be a huge issue, and there are a lot of people still working to counteract this.
Right. And I think there's been some interesting comments on our Facebook Live and YouTube feed. But I do believe, like you said, it's a way to erase us, another genocide of breaking up families, breaking up culture, breaking up of who you are, and all those things, Mary.
Well, I think that for so long, the perception of Native folks, our communities, is like those poor Indians, those backward people. They would rather live up in the woods, you know, rather than in the city or in town or things like that. Look at them. They still like to hunt and fish and be substance, you know, eaters. And, I think that perception is still very, very much there. And it's just so hard to break it. I once somebody said to me, you know, why do the Indians drink all the time? I mean, if you drive down the road, the streets, you know, in some places you see these Indians all around just laying around, you know, they're drunk. And I said, wait a minute, drive down your main street on a Friday or Saturday night when bar closes and see all the white people stumble out. You know, is it because, you know, Native American people are more identifiable, or you just don't see these things in white people anymore, but you're looking for it out of people of color? They're no different than anybody else. And it was just like the light bulb went off in the guy's eyes. It was like, wow, I never really thought about that. And I said, that's exactly it. You're looking for reasons to do that. Ogama, I think you said you thought you had something to share.
You know, when you were talking about, you know, how permeated these kinds of stereotypes are into our culture, this is a story I've told on Native Roots Radio before, but I feel like it fits here. You know, we're talking about the foster care system. I have an 8-year-old daughter and I have another daughter on the way. She'll be here in March. My 8-year-old daughter really dislikes Band-Aids. Last summer she got hurt on the back of her leg and we were trying to get this Band-Aid on her, and she didn't want it on because what happens when you pull off a Band-Aid, everybody knows that hurts a little bit. And she really, really gets stressed out about having to take off a Band-Aid, so she doesn't want it put on, but it needed to be covered to protect it so it wouldn't get infected, right? This injury she had on her leg. And me and my partner were basically like holding her down going, okay, I'm sorry you don't want to do this, but we have to cover it in some way to protect it. And she was screaming and crying and carrying on. And finally him and I like stopped and we had to look at each other and go, okay. So we walked away for a minute. We came back and we explained to her, you cannot scream like that. We are Native people. Okay, so that means that if you scream like that, our neighbors don't know why you're screaming. They may think that we're hurting you. The police are going to show up, and you're unfortunately more likely to be taken away from us. And we explained it to her not quite so frankly, but it was that warning that you, as a child, do not have that luxury to throw that kind of a fit. You know, children throw fits. It's how they learn. But she doesn't have that kind of a luxury as a Native child because she is more likely to be removed from her family. You know, I'm a Native woman. My partner is a Native man, and he's, you know, 6 feet tall. If somebody hears her screaming, the police come to the door, the perceptions, like you're talking about, that all Natives drink, that officer is likely going to have, which is likely to be a white male officer in my area, is going to be a situation that's going to look very bad for my family, even though we're just trying to take care of this child who is a bit of a warrior spirit, you know? And I am not the only Native parent that I know that has had to tell their kids that.
Lewis, yeah. you had something too to add, didn't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, real quick. I know we're running low on time, but I'd be remiss. I come from Lakota people, and white clay was such a big issue for us. And to talk about how a town of 20 or maybe 8 people was able to make millions of dollars off indigenous people serving them alcohol right off Pine Ridge Reservation. That was a huge fight. We told them time and time again, we are dry reservations. We don't want the alcohol there. And time again, you know, state legislatures would look the other way when it comes to indigenous people getting alcohol on the reservation, allowing a small town to make so much profit while these same white people go out there and promote the drunk Indian stereotype.
Right.
Exactly.
Anything to undermine, the feeling that these, like our Native folks, can get by. But unfortunately, you know, they're always trying to do underhanded things to make it look even worse than it really is. So that's really it's just really tough. It's so sad that we still have to do this in this time and age.
Right. But, you know, the positive thing, too, Mary, is what you said that you were doing this week. The more we can educate our allies and our friends about what happened historically, you know, MMIW, all those things, you know, I always talked about, you know, when I started hearing stories about it, I was blown away myself, and I didn't know the depths of it until, you know, until really you and your group started working on this bill and really bringing it to the forefront. And our neighbors in Wisconsin are working on that now too. So let's give them a little nudge too. But you're really way ahead of what's going around all around the nation about this, and it's exciting to see. And hopefully we'll get a tour and maybe a little desk in your office there. And you know, no, I'm just kidding. But it's awesome to it's really great to hear all that we've talked about for not that long that come to fruition.
Yeah. You know, and it's telling those stories. It's telling the truth. It's like connecting the dots. When people say, why is this? And you go all the way back to the moment Christopher Columbus and his men stepped on this continent, intending to steal any riches, and that included people. They sent tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of Native people back to Europe for slaves. There are terrible stories, horrible stories in their diaries and their journals about what they did and how they preyed, especially on very, very young women. And it's just that mindset that has continued. And then, you know, when we talk about, these treaties and putting them on the reservation, all of us on the reservation and telling, and, you know, saying you need to stay on the reservation and we're going to do all this stuff. We'll supply you with food and all those things. And they never have kept their promise. Never. So we have to tell the stories. We have to tell the truth.
Pina Giga for being on, as always. That was State Senator Mary Kunish. And up next, Free for All with us. Give us a call. We'll be right back. This is Native Verse Radio presents I'm Awake. Hey, Cudahy, to all my friends and relatives in four directions. This is Robert Pilot of Native Roots Radio presents I'm Awake. I'm here to ask you for your support. Finding honest, Native-centered news is not easy. But with your support, we're able to provide accurate information about Standing Rock, Lion Tree violations, and COVID-19 in our Native communities. Please visit Native Roots Radio Network on Patreon and donate if you can. That's Native Roots Radio Network on Patreon. Pina Giga, and thank you for your support.
Hey, Ogama, I've been hearing a lot about this term, climate justice. What is that?
Climate justice is recognizing that the negative impacts of climate change don't affect all people equally. It also means transitioning from a fossil fuel-based economy to a more sustainable future. MN350 is one of the groups that's pushing for this transition to protect our futures. You can even get involved, too.
That's great, especially since I'm concerned about pipeline projects like Line 3. How can I help MN350?
Just find them on Facebook or visit mn350.org.
If the statistics say that 1 in 3 Native women and 1 in 6 Native men have experienced sexual assault in their lifetime, it means our whole community is affected by sexual violence. 1 is too many. Don't stand by. Stand up. Don't engage in acts of sexual violence and shut down the dirty jokes, the gossip, the victim blaming and shaming. As a community, we can change the way we respond. Contact the Minnesota Indian Women Sexual Assault Coalition to attend a workshop to learn more.
Sponsored by the Minnesota Indian Women Sexual Assault Coalition.
Minnesota has the only original wolf population in the continental United States, and 80% of Minnesotans believe the wolf should be protected. Howling for Wolves is asking Minnesotans to respect our true wildlife manager, the wolf. Their survival is critical to our ecosystems, our communities, and even our economy. As highly intelligent animals with strong social bonds, Minnesota wolves deserve to be protected and admired. Learn more at howlingforwolves.org. Let's live and let howl.
You're listening to Native Roots Radio. This is Spirit from Reservation Dogs. Get up and listen.
I love it. Welcome back to Native Roots Radio presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Robert Pilot.
This portion of the show is brought to you by Howling for Wolves. Howling for Wolves invites you to an outdoor fundraiser featuring Native singer Jen Hewitt. Jen Hewitt is an accomplished Native American songwriter who captures the wolf's spirit. She will lead on stage with a set of songs And you can visit howlingforwolves.org/event to help wolves and to find the complete event information. The event is October 24th from 2 to 4 p.m. at the Downtown Park Pavilion in Hopkins, Minnesota at 49th Avenue South. Again, that is Jen Hewitt, Native American singer-songwriter for Howling for Wolves coming up on October 24th. Howling for Wolves is protecting wolves for future generations.
Ooh, we kept the state senator just for that. Thank you, Mary, for howling. Hey, before we get going too far here, we got a couple calls that I want to jump on. Susan from Madison, Dane County, wants to talk a little bit about native foster children. Welcome, Susan. Thanks for calling.
Thank you. I wanted to say that I did listen to the podcast, Finding Cleo. And the other thing I wanted to mention is that my family had, my sister and her husband had been fostering African-American children, and there was a situation that came up when they had a baby that they thought they would be able to keep. And they ended up having him getting reunited with his mother. And I remember the feelings that our family had because we are white. We were upset that we were losing this child. But then at the end of it, we had this party, this celebration with the family. And it was really nice. And so I was thinking about this, and I'm thinking, wow, that was kind of the exact thing that's been going on for Native kids as well. And it's not fair to have that idea that you can do something better than someone else. So I had a real awakening when I was thinking about this in my own family. It was nothing that we were doing vindictively. It just happened that that's how it played out. But it was, you know, it was out of our wanting to be supportive of a child. Do you understand what I'm going with this?
Oh,
it really wasn't anything that wanted to, yeah, that was nothing that we wanted to do that was awful. But at the end of the day, we realized that this was for this child's good, that his mom was ready to take him back. She had support with her family. And so we made it into a celebration instead of making it something else. That's all right. I wanted to say.
That is awesome. And I'm going to tell you, Susan, I'm adoptee, and I don't have a bad story about my adoptive parents, like probably 90% of the Native kids do. So I feel you, and I appreciate your call and always listening in. And there's always people with a good heart trying to do the right thing, but there's also, with the numbers and what we've gone through as a Native community, there's also a lot of bad apples that we've heard, way, way too many stories. But I really appreciate you listening in and really chiming in about that, because I wanted to say in my story, I loved my adopted parents, and I'm Robert Pilot, and I'm named after my adopted father. So I appreciate that. And before we get going here a little more, I got Blake from Minneapolis on the phone. We got to take these calls, Lewis, man. We got to get them, take them while we get them, right? Go ahead, Blake.
Thanks. Hey, I've been listening off and on for probably 3 years now, and when I stumbled across you, it's like, oh, this is so great, because I thought I knew a fair amount of stuff in Indian country, but not so much. But I just wanted to share real quick, at the end of September, me and my brother took a road trip to Seattle, because our niece was getting married, and we stopped in on the Blackfeet reservation to get supplies, and I grabbed a shower, and you know. And there were these real live reservation dogs, like a little pack of, it started out as five, but
right,
the four chased off the white one. And they were so well behaved. I mean, I had these little cheesy chips that I was feeding them, and they'd come up and every now and then there'd be a little tooth in there, but they'd take it just so gentle. And I went inside to talk with this artist guy, and I come back out. My brother has the door open. And these little doggos are in a perfect semicircle around the open door, just laying on the ground, hanging out.
Yeah.
And they were, yeah, and they heard something and went all running off, and they just ran like the wind. It was just the coolest thing.
Blake, thanks for calling and listening and being a great listener. And it's funny because right up on the top here on the screen, it says Reservation Dogs. And I thought he was going to be talking about the show. So I thought that's kind of funny. But thanks a lot, Blake, for calling in. We all have those Res Dog stories for sure. I was like, yeah. Oh, my gosh. That's crazy. But, hey, I want to have Lewis jump in here for a quick minute here, and Mary, ask Lewis a question if you want. You can't stump the Indian. I've tried to, but go ahead, Lewis.
Yeah, how am I talking up here? You had chante washte na peche use a pillow. I just wanted to spend the last couple minutes here, kind of teaching our audience a little bit about the history of Minnesota and common names we use every day. Did you know that Minneapolis itself is not pronounced Minneapolis? In fact, Minneapolis should have had an H, and it was actually a typo why Minneapolis actually does not have an H, because Minneapolis comes from the word Minnehaha, right, which is a waterfall, and he typed that in with polis, which is Greek. And for some reason, they just decided to go with Minneapolis. Now we call it Minneapolis. It should be Minneapolis. That's how you say Minneapolis. So if you say it and people get mad at you, tell them Native Roots Radio allowed you to say it that way.
Right, exactly.
Say it again slower now.
It's a Minneapolis. It's supposed to have an H. Minnehaha is waterfall. Yep. And with polis. So they got rid of the H. Somehow when they were writing it in, when the city was founded, they decided to get rid of the H. It's really crazy. It's weird how often that happens. Candy Yohai County. Yes, the county that you sleep through going to maybe Mankato or something like that. That county is actually from a Dakota name. And that name comes from the term bullhead fish. It's called Kadi Yohai, and that means bullhead fish. And people don't realize that a whole county is named after a really not the prettiest fish, but, you know, probably tasty. I don't know. I've never had bullhead, Robert. Have you?
No, I haven't. We used to fish them all the time because they gave up a good fight. But just back to what you said about Minneapolis, people don't realize this, but 100 years ago, there were falls there. On the river, yes. And the Army Corps of Engineers have really messed them up, but that's how they could tell how old and by how they moved. And it's a long story, but I took a nice class in college about that. So, but yeah, people don't realize that. You got time for one more, Lewis.
Yeah. So where you see a lot of white Land Rovers getting lattes, Chanhassen, right? But actually that word is Chahasapaha. Chahasapaha, where white bark trees are on hills, or where hills that have white bark trees. And that's near, of course, Wayzata is a spirit of the north, the north spirit. And Wayzata sits on the north side of Minnetonka. Minnetonka, it means big river in Dakota. So wherever you go, wherever you get your ice macchiato, you're on a Dakota-named land.
Wow. That's Fun Facts Friday. We miss you, Wendy, but this was pretty awesome, too. Let me give you a quick applause and end the show. All right. Great job, Lewis. All right. Hey, I would like to end with these thoughts. If you are listening to the show, you are part of the resistance. We need to resist, divest, join a group, and run for office. Peeny Gigi for State Senator Mary Kunish to be on. We're still here. We are the seventh generation, and the cat just turned off my phone. We'll see you Monday. Have a great weekend.